Thank you for joining me this evening, and tonight we're going to ask a few questions about your former relationship and some of the things you've learned along the way. Let's start by having you fill us in a little bit about yourself, your age, how long you were married, and a little bit about what happened during that period.
Okay. I'll start out by telling you a little bit about myself. I am 27 years old. I have two children. I was married for 4 years and off and on tried to work things out for the two after that. It's been no contact now for about a year other than dealing with visitation for the children. And it was pretty much off and on the whole time as well. So it's definitely been turmoil from the beginning.
And how long were you married for?
4 years we were together before things really went bad.
Now tell me a little bit about how you and your ex met.
My ex and I met, we worked at the same restaurant. We were 19 years old. He washed dishes and I was a waitress at the same restaurant. And we just kind of started talking and we lived in the same town, so we just started seeing each other from there. And about 4 months into our relationship, I was kicked out of my aunt's house for breaking a pretty simple rule, and so we moved in together, and it kind of got serious immediately.
And are there any children from this marriage?
I have two children. My son is 6 years old, and my daughter's 2.5. And right before I was pregnant with my daughter, I was pregnant, and I lost a baby right before her. And 2 weeks after the miscarriage, I was pregnant with her.
How would you describe the relationship when things were going well?
When things were going well between us, the relationship was very perfect. He was very romantic. He was very caring about the things that he did. We went out of our way to spend time together. Had a lot of the same interests. We used to fence together with swords and went out of our way when I was done with my shift late at night to go for walks and talk all the time. And it just kind of changed later on in the relationship.
Okay, so tell me a bit about what went wrong. What would you describe as being the start of the problems and how did it go downhill?
I think where it started to go wrong was the stress of being thrown together. We got our first apartment when we had been dating only 4 months, and his buddies and him started sneaking around behind my back and going out and getting drunk and not coming home or breaking his plans with me to go out and spend time and not tell me what they were doing until we ended up at the same party one night. I was probably 19 by then, and I found him and a group of people gathered around a mirror with lines drawn out on the mirror, and that pretty much was when it started going very badly.
How did you react to finding him that way?
My initial reaction to seeing them gathered was I didn't say anything. I couldn't even formulate any words in my mind. I turned around and walked out of the room and out of the house and was walking down the street. And he came chasing after me, and we had this argument, and he was like, I'm sorry, and I still love you, and, you know, what do you want me to say? And I told him that there was nothing for him to say. It was his life. He could live it how he wanted. We were having a rough patch where he wasn't sure he still wanted to be with me. So we kind of weren't together, but we had an apartment together, so we had to still continue living there. And the next day that I saw him, he was on his knees in front of me begging me to be back with me, saying that he loved me and he needed me to love him, and he was sorry and he made a mistake.
Now, why do you think you were attracted to somebody like this?
I think the reason that I was attracted to him was he said and he did a lot of the right things at first, but the reason that I stayed, I'm not sure that it wasn't because it was something that I saw as normal in my life, that my mother had chosen to a man like that for my father, and then my stepfather was the same way, abusive and drunk, and I think it seemed like a normal thing to me. I didn't see that there was anything wrong with it.
How did friends and family react to somebody like him?
My friends and family, their reactions were, they were varied. His friends were my friends because I had moved from a different, entirely different state. So if you asked his friends, he was a good guy, he was loyal, you know, kept to himself and would do anything for anyone. My family wasn't very happy with him. They didn't feel he treated me right. At first they were excited about him, but just as time progressed and we went through so much upheaval, they would have preferred that I left him alone. And they actually told me that I was stupid for getting pregnant.
Tell me a bit about the type of person you were when you met him, and then let's compare it afterwards to how you are today. So let's start. Give me a brief insight into the type of person you were when you met your ex.
When I met my ex, my personality was entirely different. I was a very quiet person. I was very laid back. I kind of took my direction from other people and fell in with the crowd and worried a lot about what people thought about me, what they said about me, about making other people like me, about making other people happy. I was completely selfless to the point of sacrificing everything that I wanted to pursue, school, other friendships, jobs, whatever it was, I would give up for whoever it is that needed something from me. And I don't think I was a very strong person at that point in time. I think I'd let a lot of stuff pile up that just made me think that maybe this was all that there was for me.
And how do you find yourself today? And we're going to talk in a few minutes about the recovery process, but how are you today? What's different?
And my personality today, I believe, has changed drastically. I'm a much more self-assured person. It's not that I don't care what people think, per se, but their opinions don't matter as much. I don't feel like my world is going to crumble if somebody doesn't like me. I am the way I am. Integrity and honesty are still a huge part of my life. I do not compromise myself or what I believe in anymore for what other people want from me. Making someone else happy does not come at the sacrifice of my happiness, let alone my children's happiness. And I found so much inner strength to get through all of my past history, to face every day not knowing sometimes how the bills are going to get paid, how the kids are going to get taken care of, how I was going to juggle school, cleaning my house, homework, after-school activities, grocery shopping, dinner, baths, and bedtime, to juggle that all and make it into my day. I don't think I would have been capable of handling that. And I think it's largely through my experiences being a single parent.
Tell us a bit about the recovery process. What did you do? What helped? Any tips you can give other people?
I think that my recovery process took a lot longer than other people's might, just for the simple fact that I do live in such a small town and I didn't want to let go of it. But once I really started to think, you know, what is good for my kids? What is good for me? You know, is this the way that I would want to see my daughter be treated? Is this the way I would want to see my son treat his girlfriend or wife? what are my dreams? And in the knowledge that I had sacrificed my dreams and my goals to try to keep this person who didn't even care about me in my life was when it started to slightly change. And then I knew that I needed to seek out the knowledge. I needed to find a support group. I needed to go to therapy if that's what I needed. I needed to find someone that I could be accountable to if I felt like I had to call my ex up or I had to go see him. Then I had somebody that I could call up and say, oh my gosh, I'm having a moment of weakness, and building the friendships of people that could be there for me when I needed them to be. And my aunt is the only person, the only family that I have here, and she was incredible in my recovery. She was there to hold me when I cried. She was there to listen to me vent. We did things together. We took the kids out together, and she just really kept after me and didn't let go of me and let me fall into that place where I couldn't get out of. And I also started going to a really good church, and I got myself involved in volunteering for the church. I was there every Wednesday, every Sunday. I started up a singles group. I helped run the coffee shop. I just kept myself very, very busy and very, very wrapped up in my, in learning what my life was going to be and in getting my kids' lives as stable as possible.
What's been the role of journaling and writing in the recovery process for you?
I think it's important to write and to journal. I left that for a long time. Writing has always been my passion, and I let it go for a long time. And I find that when I write it out, sometimes when it's in your head, it's all a muddle. But when you write it out, you have a very clear picture of what it is that you're thinking and feeling, where you want it to go from there, and to see, here's a group of bad days, here's a group of good days. You know, it's not always bad, even though it always feels bad. You can see when you write it down the progression that you do, the growth that you have, and the length that you've come in your journey is easier to see when you've written it out.
You mentioned that the church played a large role in the recovery process. For someone who's just going through the early stages of breakup, what can you tell them about seeking out the church that would help them in trying to find some relief from the pain?
I think that if a person turns to the church, for me it was, I searched through several churches. I wanted somewhere that was not going to be judgmental of me for going through a divorce process, for being a single parent. I wanted a place that my kids could get involved, somewhere that I felt comfortable, that they weren't going to leave me lost in the background because I felt lost in the background of my life at that time. I think that it's important if you're searching for a church to find somewhere that's homey enough, that people are going to greet you, that they're going to get, that you can get involved, I really enjoyed the music. It was very contemporary, very youthful church. They were involved in the community, so it was easy for me to have other activities during the day, too. I think that that's important, to have a church that's active in the community. And just, there's something comforting about being able to have a church family, other people that you can go to or that you can swap babysitting with or that you can just call up and say, look, I'm having a really bad day. Can we talk? I think that was really important.
Now, in terms of finding good therapy, what would you recommend for people that are just starting out on that process?
My biggest recommendation when you're looking for a therapist is do not get discouraged, because I went through several therapists that I did not like. You have to make sure that you're comfortable with the person that you're with, because before you know it, sometimes you're sharing things that you weren't sure that that's what you were coming there to talk about, but it's very cathartic to share that and to have gotten that off your chest. So you have to be comfortable. You have to be willing to tell people, you know, your true feelings, your true thoughts, and you have to trust them. I think trust is important I actually had a therapist tell me that he didn't know where he was going to start with me because I was so, I had so many problems that he couldn't put me in a category. And I literally left his office right there. And the therapist that I have now, she's wonderful. She makes sure I'm comfortable. We hang out on the couch and talk. And she doesn't ever pressure me if I don't want to do something. She totally backs off. I think that the trust and the comfort is number one.
How have your kids handled the divorce? And is there anything you can share about that that would help other people with kids?
I think that the divorce has been a lot harder on my son. We were, his dad and I were together most of his life that he remembers. It's just the last year, and he's six, so he remembers a lot more than his sister does. And we've had horrible behaviors. We've had stresses at school. He's very anxious about change in his life. And it shows up in discipline problems, especially because his dad is in and out of his life. And when he stays away, my son is very calm, very well-behaved, very articulate in the things that he needs. And when his dad comes in and out, and doesn't stay consistent, either here or gone, he'll burst into tears for no reason. He's destructive. He's disobedient. He stole a hat and gloves from school, and he's just up and down. And my daughter is very starved for male affection. My uncle spends a lot of time with her, and you can tell when she gets around that she just worships the male figures in her life. And she absolutely adores her dad. When she's around him, she's locked to his side. But my biggest struggle has been with trying to make them as comfortable with it as possible. And I finally had to swallow my pride and admit I don't know it all. I had to send my son to therapy, which was really hard for me, because to me that was partially admitting that I had failed. That was admitting that I had made the wrong choices in choosing his father and in letting him be and in working so hard to keep him around my son experienced things that he shouldn't have at his age. But he's calmed down a lot, and I try to make it as routine as possible. They know when they're being picked up. They know what their bedtime is. They know when they're going to eat for dinner. And I also allow them a measure of control of their lives. But it's always, the key is always, give them a choice. But give them a choice that you can live with either choice that they make. You know, would you rather eat your supper and take a bath, or would you rather take your bath first and then eat your supper, or something like that? Then they feel that they have that control. They're allowed to make a choice, and they're too young to understand that you don't care which one they do first because you're going to make them do both of them. But you've given them that. And you've taught them to make their choices, and you've let them have some sort of a input into their lives when they feel like in this divorce they can't make any choices. My son has begged me more than once, please, you can yell at Dad, but please just love him and let him come back to the house. And so his big thing is he needs to feel like he can have some kind of influence over his life, because there are things I just can't do for him.
Okay, I'm going to ask you a question about books and websites that help you. So besides the obvious website, what other websites and books would you recommend to somebody going through breakup and divorce that helped you and might help them?
I think that there is a great deal of information, both on the website and in books, that can help people who are looking for information. One of the sites that I go to is called Focus on the Family, and it's a Christian-based site. And they have little activities. They have, you know, discipline answers. They have other resources linked to that site that tell you you know, if you're looking for certain information. The books that I've gotten, there's a book called Key to Your Child's Heart, and that is more of an emotional-based parenting type. And right now when my son's emotions are so tender, it's been a great book to read and kind of get ideas of what else I can do for him. The other book that I use a lot is John Roseman's Parent Power. There is another one called Bringing Up Boys by Dr. Dobson. He's supposed to be writing another one, Bringing Up Girls, but I have not seen it yet. But those are mostly the ones that I've kind of used for a good base when I'm totally at odds ends and I don't know where else I'm supposed to go. I kind of turn to those for my reference base.
Okay, let's turn the subject now to a hot topic. Dating when you're going through breakup and divorce. Any words that you'd like to share on that topic?
Well, for me, the most difficult thing was considering the whole possibility of dating again. I have not dated that much. I've only probably dated one or two people, and we technically split when I was pregnant with my daughter, and she's 2.5 now, so almost 3.5 years. I've maybe only dated 2 or 3 people. I think personally, I'm very careful to keep my dating life separate from my children. They are already going through upheaval with the divorce and getting used to the fact that their mom and dad are no longer in the same house and trying to come to terms with what that means for their life. To drag men different dates in and out of the home, or to be around people and break up and be with someone and break up, and to have that a consistent in your kids' lives, really, I think, is not a good thing for them. So any dating that I do is completely kept separate from my kids.
How's your view changed about romance and relationships before and after your marriage?
I think that the big change in my views on relationships and love has come probably in the last couple of months. I've come through a very cynical phase where I don't think I have faith in love and romance, and I know that I want that, and I know that it's possible, and I've seen it happen after divorce numerous times. But I think you go through this phase where you're completely cynical. You're coming to terms, and I'm only 27, so I'm still pretty young in a lot of my thoughts. And you have to bring together what you feel when you're young and the romance novels that you read, the happily ever after movies that you see, and all of these ideals of youth, that love is easy, that love is something magical, that somebody's going to come and sweep you off your feet, and you step into adulthood and you realize love is a commitment, love is work, love is a choice when the other person isn't really doing what you feel that they should or acting how you feel that they should. And I know that some of the things that I felt were important in the relationship when I was younger totally not amount to anything. They're not what's important when you're looking for somebody that you're going to spend the rest of your life with. Not at all.
Any tips for somebody that faces being a single parent after being in a relationship that you can share?
I think it was very hard for me to come to terms with my finances. We're going from 2 incomes to 1 suddenly. And actually, at the time of the divorce, I was staying home with my kids. And so it was out in the job market, trying to find a job, trying to figure out how to make the money stretch. And I had to learn to very much discipline myself to what is essential, what do you need, not what you want. a lot of the time I sacrificed my own needs for what my kids needed, you know, diapers, and it's hard sometimes for people to ask for help, but the situation that I was in when we very first divorced, I had to swallow my pride, and I had to find out income-based housing. I had to find out what other programs they had to get me on my feet and use that help while I needed it. And now the only help that I get is daycare assistance. They pay daycare when I work, and I do live in income-sensitive housing, which is a huge help because I could not, at this point, afford to pay $500 a month in rent to get a 2 or 3 bedroom place. And here it's based on my income. So, you know, we do without sometimes the things that we want, but we've never had to go without the things we need. And I think that a person who does their research, who finds out where the sales are, how they can save some money, buying off brands of stuff saves a lot of money, and it adds up. A dollar here and there will always add up. And I'm still able to go to the store and go to the 88-cent toy rack at Walmart, and my son is perfectly pleased with a bag of little animals. And to him, that's a special trip. You've been good this week. I appreciate your help cleaning the house. I want to buy you a little toy. Well, that's a way for me to go and spend less than a dollar and still be able to get him a little something where he feels my mom is happy with me. And for kids, it's not what you get them. It's the time that you spend with them. It's the effort that you make. Sitting together coloring means more to my son, I found, than taking him to Chuck E. Cheese or to the zoo. If you put forth the effort, they won't ever notice that they're ever missing out on anything.
Tell me a little bit about, we talked earlier about some of the impact your childhood had on the relationships you formed and certainly the marriage you had. Would you like to give me a bit of background to that?
Well, I believe that my childhood was probably key in the choices that I made as far as relationships went. I had seen a great deal of abuse from a very young age. The only memories that I have of my father are abusive memories between him and my mother, and he left when I was 6. And then she married my stepfather when I was probably about 7. And as soon as they were married, he started abusing us emotionally, mentally, physically. And I stood and protected my sisters a lot, so I took a lot more of it than they did. And to me, I'd never seen any other relationship. That was normal to me. That was the way men were supposed to treat women. That was how women were supposed to act. We were supposed to just sit and take it and stay with them no matter what they did, no matter how they acted or talked to us. That was just something that you dealt with. And from the very beginning, you know, my first boyfriend, who physically abused me, who raped me at a young age, that to me was something I didn't dare tell my mother. She wasn't approachable. She had dealt with those things herself, so I felt that she was just going to tell me it was no big deal. Don't make a big deal about it. So I stayed with those things. We split for college, and then with my marriage, it was the same thing. You know, things started out wonderful, and then once things got not so wonderful, I had this image in my head that love was staying, no matter what it was, no matter how they talked to you, no matter how they treated you, or anything, and you couldn't just give up on it. And so I think that, not that I blame my mother, but I think that it definitely influenced me to not leaving sooner than I did and to thinking that those things were okay.
So what would you tell a woman that's going through either a relationship that's abusive right now or who's just come out of an abusive relationship?
I think that the most important advice to let someone know who's either in an abusive relationship or currently or just leaving one is not to be, I think I was very hard on myself. I felt that there wasn't anything that I didn't deserve. I felt that there was nothing better out there for me. It leaves a lot of very deep scars that you're not sure what you're supposed to deal with or how you're supposed to deal with it. I think that definitely get involved in some sort of a support-based group, whether that's with a church or with a therapist, to help kind of work through some of the things that come along with being physically abused. I think really the breaking point for me that really changed things was my ex hitting me in front of my son, and to look down in my son's face after he just saw his dad punch me. That really was the key for me. And having grown up for so many years, watching my stepfather hit my mother and watching, you know, having us be hit by him, to me it was, I refuse to continue this cycle. You know, you really have to get into your mind that you do not want your kids growing up like that. You don't want them to suffer the statistics of people who continue to go back to those that don't make it out alive. You know, you have to, are your children important enough? You know, is your health important enough? Is you being around to see your children get married, graduate, have babies of their own important enough for you to separate yourself from the situation? And it's not easy. And people who have not been in the situation, they really see it in black and white. Well, if he hits you, you should leave. Well, it's not so much that as it is a dependency upon the person, even though they're abusing you, that they are so woven into the fabric of your life that you're not sure what your definition is as a person outside of them. And they become, and people who hit and abuse weave themselves into the fabric of your life for that reason. They don't leave you very many options, no place to go. Sometimes they don't let you keep in contact with your friends or your family, so, which is the way it was with my mother and her and my stepfather. And it's just really finding out where your strength is, finding out where your bottom is, and just taking it one step at a time. It's not something that's going to break immediately. It's not something that you're not going to still want to be with them, or you're not going to still love them, or you're going to be strong overnight, because it's taken me 3.5 years to come to this point where I absolutely refuse to put myself back in that situation. No matter what he says to me, no matter what begging he does, you know, no matter any new person that comes in my life, if they ever approach that line, it wouldn't even be an option, you know, and it's been constant getting myself information, giving advice to other people, finding support groups that have really gotten me to the point where I can say, I am worth more, I do deserve more, I will not repeat this behavior. My children will not experience this behavior in their life if I have to be single for the rest of my life. That will never come across them. The cycle stops with me. And that's the important part, is stopping the cycle before it continues on to the next generation, for them to take the scars with them into their lives and repeat the same behaviors that we do, who find people who abuse us.
Where can women find support groups? I mean, where would they go looking?
I think the best places, if you're hesitant to find them in your own town and you have computer access, there's a lot of places that you can go. There are some people who are so far into where they are with abuse that are more comfortable finding books. And there's a lot of books. I like the Christian books personally, because just my own personal faith, and I feel like sometimes the Christian books are a little bit gentler on your soul. When you come out of abuse, you're very, very tender, very, very bruised. You know, and I've read all that I could up on relationships, a really great book that kind of helped me give my focus back was called The Power of a Positive Woman. And it focused solely on what kind of traits women carry. It, you know, talked about our strengths, and it made me look at myself and go, oh, yeah, you know, I do that. That is part of me. You know, that is a good part of me. And to kind of, you know, and if you have some faith, a church is a good place to go. They do have, a friend of mine goes to a women's shelter, like a battered women's shelter, and that they are very, they're very, very supportive to her. And it's pretty much easy to find it. The internet has been a really great resource for me because you can just type in a keyword and you can even type in your city name and they'll link you to all the information that you need right there.
Let's turn to the subject of the legal part of the divorce. Do you want to share a few words about the legal process, how it treated you, and what sorts of things you could share with others as insight?
The legal part of the divorce, I was very fortunate. I worked at a law office at the time. I was a secretary at a law office. So I had a lot of connections there where I could, I chose an attorney who was opposing counsel on a lot of our cases. And so it was easy for me to find that. I think my word of advice would be don't let him convince you to do anything that you are not comfortable with. If you are not comfortable giving unsupervised visitation, tell him that. Stick to your guns. They have to, you pay them. They have to do what you say. If you give an inch that you don't want to give, it's very much a lot harder to get that inch back than it is to not compromise and give that inch later. So write down, before you go talk to an attorney, what you want, what will not compromise on, what you're willing to bend on, and show it to them. They're more than happy to say, okay, here's your list. Let's tackle it from here. Make sure you cover all your bases as far as your kids, as far as your property, as far as your debt, because once it's written out, it is so much harder to go back and do. And there are, for every income level, there's pro bono, there's legal aid, there's regular attorneys, depending on what kind of money situation that you're in, and they're all pretty equal in what they do. But you have to definitely stand up and say, this is what I want, this is what I won't stand for, and this is my goal right here. Because if you don't, they'll do whatever with it, and you'll wind up giving things that you weren't comfortable with. But I'm bossy like that. I told my lawyer what I wanted to do, and he did it, so.
Where do you see yourself and your kids in 5 years' time? What would you like for yourself and your kids?
I think that in 5 years, my goals for myself and my children, I would like to have their lives stable. I would like to finish school. That's one of the dreams that I sacrificed during my marriage because he didn't believe that me educating myself or finishing my degree was worthwhile. I'd like to have that finished and be making better money because that would give me the freedom to tell my kids, sure, we can go eat at McDonald's tonight, or yes, we're going to take a vacation this year. I would love to have saved up some money to take them to Disneyland or something. But most importantly, I really want them to be comfortable with where they are, to know that no matter what else goes on in their life, I'm going to be the constant in their life. Whether we're here or there or somewhere else, whether I'm still single or whether I'm seeing someone, the most important thing is for them to know that this is, our family is broken, but our family is still good, and it's still something that they can count on, and it's still a place that they can come to for safety and comfort.
What would you tell someone who's going through the first few days of a breakup or divorce? What would be your action plan/advice to them?
I think that any advice that I would give to someone who was going through the first few stages, the first few days of a breakup or a divorce, I think the first thing I would say is hold on. It seems so terribly overwhelming. The pain is all that you see. It's all-encompassing. It does get better. And I hated and loathed with a passion when people told me that, because my first reaction was, you don't know. You don't understand what I'm feeling. And I absolutely 100% can say it will get better. It takes time. It takes struggle. You'll go to bed, your pillow will be soaked with tears for a long time, but one day you will wake up and it'll be just a little bit easier to get up that day. And the next day it'll get just a little bit easier. And just hold on. Just hang on. It does get better.
I want to thank you very much tonight for your time and for sharing your words.
You're quite welcome.